Welcome to the Larry Miller Show. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin.
Welcome
to the Larry Miller Show.
Radio.
I'm Judith Sears, and I am broadcasting from the Milwaukee studios. Happy to be here with our Wisconsin Public Radio colleagues and coworkers, and happy also to have Chef Michael Fecker with us. He's the owner and executive chef of Il Mito Enoteca in Wauwatosa, and also the new Il Mito East in downtown Milwaukee. He shares his passion and knowledge of food and healthful cooking through CMF's School of Culinary Magic. He studied at the California Culinary Academy and has called Wisconsin home since 1997. Chef Fecker, always great to get to talk with you.
Always great to be with you. Always.
And, you know, it seems like no matter what the season, you have fun and exciting and delicious things to do with the produce of the season.
You know, when you live food, it doesn't matter what the season is. You just live it. That's all it is. I love food. I manifest my love for life through food. So whatever nature throws at me, I love it. And I usually try to say to everybody, and I hope all the listeners are listening, if we go seasonal, the majority of the chaos that exists on our day-to-day basis related to food takes care of itself. Because nature is the best calendar out there, you
it's
know?
True.
When it comes to flavors, even better than that. So when it's tomato season, we should take advantage of that. When it's asparagus season, we should take advantage of that. At the same time, nature is telling you, like, the way the seasons work, stay away from specific ingredients at this time because this is not what your body needs right now. And, for example, the rejuvenation that we go through spring, that's why specific ingredients are higher in availability than there are not in mm-hmm. winter, because winter is basically relaxing time. You know, we go in hibernation,
right.
On and on and on.
And I really think that there's something to eating seasonally and actually knowing that you're only going to have those particular ingredients for a short period each year. So knowing that, oh, there are just a couple weeks where I can asparagus at the market, or, oh, it's morel season and everyone goes crazy. You know, there's something special about that. I think it really loses something when you can get anything you want any day of the year because it's in season somewhere.
That is absolutely correct. You know, Judith, what I always say is if we remember the three W's that I have created for myself, hopefully everybody listens as well, is why am I putting this specific ingredient or whatever it is in my body? Where did it come from? And what's in it? If we ask those three W's on a regular basis, it becomes in our subconscious, it's always going to be there. So you know that China, for example, is the largest producer of asparagus, okay? And Michigan is right across the lake, also is the largest one of the largest producer of asparagus in the United States. So let's eat local, and let's understand why we eat local. Because why? It only travels from right there across the lake and comes over here, and we pick those beautiful asparagus at the market, and we enjoy it. In winter, there is no asparagus from Michigan. Where is it coming from? Either Peru or China. How long has it traveled? A long time. The nutrients are gone, so what are we putting in our body? Really doesn't have any cause or reasoning behind it anyway.
Right. At best, it's a shadow of what it should be,
exactly.
And maybe it's even not as good as that.
Exactly. I completely agree with you.
So here we are in, it's funny because it feels more like early spring the weather, but if you look at the calendar, here we are in the first week of June already.
That's correct.
And so what are some of those great early summer, late spring vegetables and fruits that
right.
you love finding in the market?
Right. You know, I am a big believer. I love asparagus. I love artichokes. I love peas. Those are basically the staples of spring, you know, that come on. And if you see my new menu that's going to be released very soon, is all of those. And people a lot of times look at it that, well, you have asparagus here, you have asparagus here. That's what we call dovetailing in kitchen and menu design. You take one specific ingredient and you manifest it in different ways. Asparagus is huge for me. So to answer your question, I love artichokes. And one of the reasons that we don't touch artichokes on a regular basis, fresh from the market, we usually go for that artichoke heart that's in a can or a jar, is because we feel it's complicated.
People don't know what to do with them.
Keep it simple, everybody. Just bring a beautiful broth to a boil, put in your artichokes, cover them with a plate that is turned around and pushes them down. Let them boil through. Notice I have not talked about any cleaning, not removing any leaves, nothing. Leave it alone. Let it cook through. Once it's done, the cleaning is going to be a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Breeze. And then you have all of those beautiful artichokes cooked. You cut them in half, brush them with some olive oil. Grilling season, grilling time, you're out there by the pool, throw them on the grill, let them grill up, and a little bit of good olive oil, dip it in there and enjoy it and think about me and get Fekir eyes.
I'm talking with Chef Michael Fekir of Il Mito Restaurant and culinary school and catering and all kinds of wonderful things. Chef Fekir is passionate about food, as you can probably tell, and he's happy to share their passion with you. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller, and we would love to have you join the conversation. We are in our Milwaukee studios today, so you will call the Milwaukee number to talk with Chef Fekir. That's 1-800-486-8655. Again, 1-800-486-8655. You can also send us an email at talk@WPR.org or post a question, comment, or favorite recipe or photo of a favorite food. We'd love to see it all on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. So you just waxed poetic about asparagus, Chef Fekir. What about things like ramps and morels that are really foraged food?
Oh my God, yes. How could I even not mention that first? Ramps, which we also refer to as wild leek. Mm-hmm. We have a small window when we use ramps. But ramps, usually we don't think about what to do with them. Anything you use garlic and onion for, ramps will do beautifully. The leaves, in my opinion, are one of the magnificent additions to eggs.
Oh.
When you do a ramp omelet, you know, the French are famous for that when ramps are in season. And they do a beautiful egg dish with it in the mornings. I also love creating a ramp pesto. I love taking the leaves, using the stalks for other things, and taking the leaves and blending them with a little bit of arugula, a little bit of basil, and Italian parsley. By the way, all the listeners out there, you ask for a personal chef, here I am. What's going on here, you know? If you have questions, you better bring it. Let's have a throwdown.
This is your opportunity.
I love it. I would love to hear from everybody. And meanwhile, ramps, again, another thing that I love. I love to do a goat cheese and ramp souffle. Basically, chop that up, saute it with a little bit of garlic, then fold in. You know, all of these recipes are either on your website or ilmito.com. They can download many of these recipes that I'm talking about. But the bottom line, the reason that I'm here, hopefully, I get to explain to you, I am not a believer to make you a recipe follower. I would love you to be recipe creators. And when you know the whys of cooking, you are a creator. You know, when you only follow the hows, then we only take or eat or enjoy what they put in front of us. So hopefully today, you know, during the phone conversation, I am asked those questions, that how do I become a why kind of a person instead of a how person? Ask the why. That's the first thing that we do. So speaking of ramps,
why are we eating this? Yeah,
and
with ramps, I think things like ramps or morel mushrooms, where you can't count on finding them, there's that extra layer of pleasure when you're able to enjoy them.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really, it feels like a special occasion.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things, Judith, that we also sometimes make a mistake, protein is usually the center of the plate. That is exactly what we need to analyze. Seasons should dictate what should be the main player and the main actor. The supporting cast is going to be dictated by the seasons as well. So make life easy for you. When it's vegetable season, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, you know. So when it's vegetable season, let them be the stars. And then make protein the side, the actor on the side to complement the main stars. That's what it is. Ramps right now, we have maybe a couple of more weeks left when it comes to good ramps. And so ramps, as I mentioned, do it with eggs. The leaves are concerned. The stems, blend them, chop them, put them in your pasta dishes, saute with them. At the same time, they have very much the characteristics of garlic. A little bit overcooked, they get bitter on you, just like a beautiful garlic does. And when you have any ramps that you can get, absolutely, take the leaves off. Dry the leaves a little bit on a newspaper, freeze them, and take the stems and freeze them as well. So if you're going to want those flavors again in the middle of a season that ramps are not available, pull them and tease the palate. And make sure you tease it and you go, oh, just a few more months left. And boom, I'm going
to
get some more
just
fresh ramps.
Just to get you through.
That's right,
the next
exactly.
Season. Well, and
feed your addiction, basically. Right?
A caller wanted a little more clarification about what a ramp is, and it is referred to as a wild leek.
Exactly.
Describe it. It's not as long as like a green onion or a scallion.
Absolutely. Great question. They're taking arugula. Think about an arugula or a watercress that has very thin stems and has a pinkish, reddish leaf with majority of it green. Rhubarb would be a good explanation of how the leaves would look, but a little bit rounder in the corners, but very small, like you said.
Right.
So they come in very, very small heights, maybe few inches, 3-4 inches.
Right. Yeah. Like most wild foods, wild things, they're exactly. not these huge, like you spotted a mile away.
We haven't genetically modified anything. Right. You know, we do not want to get the most out of the least amount of effort. That's what nature does. You know, nature gives it, we take it. Yeah.
We're talking with Chef Michael Fecker from Il Mito Enoteca and Il Mito East, and also the CMF School of Culinary Magic. He's here to answer your questions and hear your comments. What food are you passionate about? Do you have a special early season produce recipe that you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-486-8655. That's our Milwaukee number, 1-800-486-8655. Well, I have to say one of my favorite items of produce that really say spring to me are radishes. And I love radishes. And, you know, I just pulled some of my first little French breakfast radishes out of the garden the other day, and they were delicious and really sweet and juicy, crunchy. Oh. And they're great raw. But I'm wondering if you ever use radishes in cooked dishes.
I do. One of the things that I also said from the beginning, that the wise probiotics is something that we need in our diets constantly. So one of the things that I do with radishes, I do a quick pickling of radishes. My wife and I, we love pickles, but again, we don't have time for
the
long radishes. So heat up some beautiful Wisconsin apple cider vinegar. Season it with your favorite flavorings that you like, such as pickling spices or rosemary, anything you wish. Slice some radishes 1/8 inch thick, round, and pour your vinegar that while it's hot over it and let it cool down. Remove from the vinegar. There's your vinegar, pickled radishes. Then you make these magnificent paninis or sandwiches at home with some fresh ingredients, and you put some of those on there.
Nice little garnish,
and
yeah.
Not only a garnish, but Judith, the contrast in the acidity that cleanses your palate is like nature just came up with the best recipe for great enjoyment. Also, I love roasting radishes. The only thing with radishes, you got to remember, when you roast them, they change color. They lose that red cover that they have, which is fine. But I have a salad that I do with roasted beets and radishes and goat cheese and watercress, all combined. Now, one more thing that when you were talking to all of our listeners about sending their favorite recipes or what they want. Also, I want to hear from you what you love to eat but you hate to cook, because it never turns out right.
That's a good point.
Yeah, never turns out right. That's why I'm here, to answer any of those questions and figure out the whys together. That's one of the – but in radishes, also, you said it the best way. Raw is magnificent. Also, radishes chopped up with mint and yogurt would be beautiful.
That's a very nice little salad.
Yeah, that would be a gorgeous salad. Again, you get the probiotics, you get all the anti-inflammatory that exists in radishes, and you get that nice crunch and mint, which is the cleanser, all the way.
Mint is always it's so refreshing.
That's right.
And like you said, it really, especially if it's with something rich like sour cream or something.
Exactly. Especially when you pick it out of your own garden.
Yes.
By the way, two of the herbs that I think we should all have, because they just go crazy on their own and they don't need that much attention, is mint and rosemary. Just make sure you do them in planters.
Yeah, because mint.
They take over.
Mint takes over. It's nice, but yeah, I have mint and daylilies that are competing with each other, both pretty aggressive.
Exactly, right.
So, well, we are talking about wonderful types of food foraged and bought at markets and grown in our own gardens and what to do with it with Chef Michael Fecker of Il Mito Restaurant. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Chef Michael Fecker about all the wonderful produce that the early season brings us, and more importantly, what to do with them. And we have several callers who answered your plea for people to join the conversation.
That's
so
great.
Let's go first to Dave in Superior. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Dave.
No, you have mentioned foraged foods, and you haven't mentioned fiddlehead ferns.
Shame on me. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Because, first of all, just like other few other ingredients that we mentioned, that we have a very small window, fiddlehead ferns are very low when it comes to the window of time that we have. I love to keep them simple. Personally, I love to keep them simple because they have such a distinct flavor. Always blanch them for maybe 25, 30 seconds in hot boiling water that is well salted. And then shock them in cold, icy water to stop the cooking process. Saute them with a little bit of garlic, extra virgin olive oil, pepperoncini, and that's all I do. That's all. This is the way I eat it, and it's a great, great, great ingredient.
What do you like to do with it, Dave?
Very similar. We freeze them also because, but they're not as good frozen, of course. But blanch them and then into cold water, and then sometimes we just steam them with as we would broccoli and cauliflower with other things.
Wonderful.
But then served with the olive oil sounds wonderful.
Dave, I want to just jump in and share something with you. When we freeze an ingredient, which you know probably because you do it on a regular basis, we freeze the internal water content. So when we defrost it, we have a mushier vegetable when it comes to it. And that's what you mentioned. The contrast in texture is not the same as the fresh. So this is my suggestion. The next time when you freeze it and you're going to defrost it, usually it's going to be in the fall or winter. Roast them with some Brussels sprout. Roast them so you take out that extra water content. Mm. You create a nice crunch on the surface. Still is the same ingredient, but it is just manifested in a different way. Try this one the next time you do it.
Very good. We'll do that.
And we'll want to report back. Actually, we'll want an invitation for dinner.
I want to be there, Dave.
I would go up to Superior, wouldn't you?
You better believe it.
We'll take a road trip up, Dave, and you can make us the fiddlehead ferns. Now, Dave, it sounds like you go out and forage the fiddleheads yourself.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And is there...
In Maine, they do appear in the grocery stores, but here they are. They don't. I've never seen them in grocery stores.
I think I've seen them maybe once at Whole Foods, but that's about it.
And they travel a long way before they get to the market. Right. What Dave does is the magnificent way of doing it.
And is a fiddlehead fern one type of fern that you can harvest, or is it any of the tops of the young ferns?
I don't think that any of them are poisonous, but we go for the ostrich fern.
Okay, so it's the top of the ostrich. Okay,
you know, taller in the summer, ones, right. You can recognize them because they're the big, tall ones with the dark seeds, cedar spore stalk in it. So you go out and you just see where these big, lush patches of ferns are, and then you know where to go in the spring when they're only 2 inches tall.
And you keep it quiet so nobody else gets there.
And, my friend, you got me in Milwaukee. Anytime you're coming in with a plastic bag full of those, your place is at my table. Always.
Oh, the other thing that you can forage, of course, again, in a fairly narrow window, is deer.
Deer. You mean like venison?
Venison.
Yeah. Yes, right. Yeah.
It's a little more involved than going out and picking some fiddleheads.
Right.
But you're right. Yeah, and thanks for that call, David. Actually, that is an interesting point of, you know, using meats that are harvested, too.
Yeah, speaking about the ferns, fiddlehead ferns, I love sauteing also. Because, Judith, one of the things is that we need to look at food in a way, what pleases you? If you love to manifest it at breakfast, use it with your eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Saute them with some bell peppers and everything else and make it a part of your nice vegetable omelet that you wish. Scramble eggs with the by the way, when we scramble eggs, this is a mistake that I see on a regular basis in my classes. We add the ingredients after we add the eggs. Always cook your vegetables first in the pan before you add the eggs, because eggs coagulate at 160 degrees Fahrenheit. By the time our vegetables are cooked, our eggs are turned into hockey puck, and we don't want that. So we want it very creamy, and so cook your ingredients like the fiddlehead ferns, sorrel, all of those with your garlic, your bell peppers, your mushrooms, saute them. Once they release the water content, then you add the eggs, and there you go. Where did that come from? I have no idea. I had to talk about it anyway.
But that was a great point, because that is something I think that often, we put the egg in, and then we try to do the vegetables. Well, you just mentioned sorrel, and Janice actually has something to say about sorrel. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I had a question about sorrel. I'd like to make a sorrel soup, and you said you could help us create a recipe, so that would be my question. And also, how can I tell if I've waited too long with the sorrel? I just bought a plant last year, and it looked like too little to do anything with. And now this is its second year, and I'm wondering if I waited too long to harvest it.
I don't believe so. If you did you bring it in?
No, it's outside in the rain now.
But it's growing.
Yeah, it's growing back.
Yes, it's growing.
Sure. Yeah, it's a perennial. Yeah, got it. No, I think you're fine. Sorrel soup, just to share with you. If you want this flavor of sorrel to come through in a soup and you want a puree soup, you need a lot of it. My suggestion is using sorrel as a garnish, but a sufficient amount of it that you still taste it. This is what I would do. I would take the stems and I would blend them. And I would create like a pesto concept, okay? And then I would take the leaf and I julienne them or basically shred them really fine. Once I'm serving my soup, usually with potatoes, leeks, green onions, that would be the same flavor profiles. Of course, potato is not, but it's a thickener that you're using. And then I would drizzle some of that beautiful pesto on top and shred the shredded sorrel on top. So with every bite, you have that distinct explosion of flavor from the sorrel. If you want to put them in the soup, you're going to hide them, and they're going to lose their beautiful, mild flavor that they have.
And also, I know we're going to get some calls saying, what is sorrel or sorrel? And why don't you describe it? It's a green. That is a very citrusy flavor.
Citrusy, exactly.
I love it.
Yeah, you know what? Again, I would mention how sorrels look are very much, again, like an arugula, except they don't have any cuts in
the
leaves.
It's not the notched.
They notch the leaves. Very citrusy. And if you look at rhubarb and celery, you taste that citrusiness. Mm-hmm. Is sorrel and then arugula, and it has a little bit of peppery flavor to it. Mm-hmm. I love sorrel. I mean, my God, but again, to me, to put it in a soup, it has to have its distinct. It's got to be the main actor. And how do we achieve that, basically?
Well, yeah, and as you said, it's got a very. I mean, you wouldn't want to just eat it raw by itself because it's such a sharp, citrusy, acidic flavor. But that's great because then you can use a smaller quantity. I have to say, making kind of a sorrel pesto, like you said, and then putting it on a nice broiled fish is a really
that
nice
is
way
a
to
great
use it.
And again, now instead of broiling right now because grill season is there, can you just imagine a beautiful high fat content fish such as salmon that we use on a regular basis, good omega fats, you grill them very simply and then you put a sorrel drizzle over them, a lot of sorrel pesto on it, and just some cracked pepper and some sea salt, and that's it, and leave it alone. Nature is going to do its work for you. Yeah.
Great. Thanks for that call, Janice. And let's go right to Tim in Eau Claire next. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I actually have a couple quick questions for you.
Hi, Tim.
One, I'd like to get your view on sugar in tomato sauce. Mm. I was always raised that it is absolutely sacrilege. And this came up yesterday when I was making a sauce and I wanted to include some ramps in it and things like that. And I had a friend over, and they reached for the sugar, and I slapped their hand away with the
Good for you. Good for you.
And then I'm also, one more thing that I'm looking forward to is squash blossoms and pumpkin blossoms.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there. Everybody, you know, you could find how to do squash blossoms and pumpkin blossoms. They're delicious.
No, but that's a great thing to bring up.
Make me love rhubarb. I don't like rhubarb. I'm not a big sweet fan. I'm more of a sultry kind of fan. I like food that has some. I don't like sugar.
No, I'm completely with you. I'm completely with you. First of all, let me go back to that myth that we have used sugar in tomato sauce. The reason that we usually use sugar in tomato sauce is because we are camouflaging the natural acidity of a tomato. And that one, the majority of the acidity of a tomato, it's in its peel. So when the tomato is peeled, it usually doesn't have any acidity that is going to be overpowering. Second of all, if the tomato is ripe, the whole idea of making a tomato sauce is tasting the tomato, not camouflaging it with sugar. I personally, if you download my recipe on ilmito.com, I do not add any sugar to my tomato sauce. My natural sugar in my sauce is carrots and onion. I slow cook them at a very low temperature with olive oil until they're mushy, then add my tomatoes, cook them for 20 minutes, blend them, there's my tomato sauce. Also, don't forget that tomato sauce is a mother sauce. So as a mother sauce, we do not want to add any distinct flavors to it. Don't add your basil. Don't add your garlic. Don't add any of the herbs that you usually would add when you have decided what cuisine you're going to be enjoying it. Do it in a nice large batch. Freeze some in the freezer. Pull them out and enhance their flavors with specific flavors that you want to have for that cuisine. Tonight, I want to eat Italian. Then let me add my garlic and let me add my basil and let me add my oregano. Tomorrow I want to eat Tex-Mex or Mexican. I want to add my cilantro. I want to add my tomatillos, on and on and on.
Or so, even Indian and adding
Indian,
your curry.
Beautiful. And, yeah. Exactly. Using it and making it as a mother sauce is the way it should be done. But I agree with you. I do not add any sugar. Rhubarb. I got to make you a rhubarb lover because of the following reasons. We make a mistake that the only preparation for rhubarb is tons of sugar and making it into rhubarb strawberry pie. I sold this beautiful special last week, and it was a great Wisconsin walleye that was pan-seared, and I did a rhubarb, strawberry, mint, and basil salsa on it. And that's all I did. And the rhubarb gave you that acidity, gave you that beautiful saltiness that you needed. And the strawberry gave it a little bit of tang because, again, just like yourself, I am not a sugar man. I am not a sweet man. I don't like
sweet sauce. Oh, I think you're very sweet.
that part of it, Judith, of course. What do you mean?
I couldn't resist.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to actually say something to you too, Tim, about rhubarb. Because actually, just the other night, we went out to a wonderful restaurant in Madison. And my husband had a piece of wonderful grilled fish. I can't remember. It might have been Blue Marlin. And it had a rhubarb ramp and lardon. Oh. Sauce on it, and lardon is basically like little bacon bits.
Correct. Except it hasn't been smoked.
Exactly.
Which is the belly of the animal.
So
yeah.
Obviously not a sweet sauce, and it was amazing. But I looked up quickly here, Tim. Are you ready for some rhubarb resources that might change your life?
Always.
Okay. Well, we had on the show a couple of years ago some ladies from the Divine Rhubarb Committee. They are from a town in Minnesota, Lanesboro, Minnesota, and the town does a huge rhubarb festival every year. And they have a cookbook, and it's called Everything Rhubarb, Recipes and Stories from a Small Town that Celebrates Rhubarb. And they have things like rhubarb ketchup, rhubarb barbecue sauce, rhubarb with pork loin, rhubarb in things that you would never think of, and it's delicious. So I would recommend checking out, and it's just a really fun book, too. It's Everything Rhubarb by the Divine Rhubarb Committee.
Yeah, Tim, just a quick question also, one before you get the book and you study what Judith suggested. Anything that you love to eat, you can always find a place for it, for an ingredient that you do not like to cook with. That means if you like celery, you can certainly use rhubarb, except you cook it to a point that the acidity or the acidity level has been evaporated, on and on and on. I am a big believer in rhubarb eaten raw, and you will love it. It will be acidity, it will be saltiness, it would be earthiness, it would be all of those involved.
I have a quick suggestion for you, something. I was raised in a very Italian household,
yes.
And how we always rub down the acidity of tomatoes, and looking back on it, it doesn't make any sense because coffee is also pretty acidic. But for some reason, when we would add coffee to, and I'm not talking a lot of coffee, just, you know, a little bit of coffee that's left in the, you know, left in the coffee pot, maybe a few tablespoons.
Right.
For some reason, it helped to break down the tomatoes just a little bit more and break down some of the other sugars that were in it, and get rid of some of that acidity and actually almost blend the flavors together a little bit better.
I think you're onto something, because coffee does that in many, many different preparations. Like some of these great, great barbecue sauces that are created, it's a marriage creator. You know, it creates a blend of flavors and relaxes some flavors. I think you're onto something. I'm certainly going to try it as well. In all generality, I think tomatoes should be left alone. I don't think tomatoes try to be camouflaged and hidden, and the acidity. We have two different kinds of tomato sauce, everybody. We have a salsa fresca, which means fresh. That means we take a tomato from the vine and we use it. And the whole beauty of that is tasting that acidity. Otherwise, what's the point? And one of the famous sauces that we all love is alla checca, which is sliced tomatoes, basil, garlic, and extra virgin olive oil. A magnificent Roman sauce that can't be any simpler than that. So if you want to have it fresh, leave it alone. Sugar, remove it anyway, in general. Why? Because you don't need it, in my opinion.
And even if it doesn't taste quite right without that sugar the first couple times, you'll adapt and be happy that
Absolutely.
You did. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, talking with Chef Michael Fecker about all the wonderful things to do with the early summer and late spring produce. He is the chef and owner and executive chef of Il Mito Enoteca in Wauwatosa, also the new Il Mito East in downtown Milwaukee. And he also teaches classes through the CMF School of Culinary Magic, and also does wonderful catering, and he is happy to share his passion with you when you call 1-800-486-8655. That's our Milwaukee number. Coming up at 11:45, Jessica Bell from My Wine School will be here, and she will talk about refreshing summer wines and also some non-alcoholic options, and we'd love to have you stay tuned for that. Let's go back to the phones and go to Boris in Wausau. Hi, Boris.
Yeah, hi. Great show. Thank you.
Hi, Boris.
I have one one question and actually two questions. First is, why is a lettuce that's very common in central Germany where I'm from, it's called lamb's lettuce or mash, is not available in Wisconsin, despite it loves a mild frost now and then. It would be a fantastic plant, and the nutty flavor of it is just unbeatable. Mm-hmm. The other question I have is, the other day I made a chili, and I added tamarind, and then I thought that olives would be a great marriage with tamarind. I put in a whole handful of ground-up, well-tasting Kalamata, and my kids deemed that this was the best chili I ever
made. Bet. Oh,
is
my God.
Is there any substance to that?
Wow.
It is, first of all, tamarind, the sourness of tamarind and the creaminess of it, the earthiness of tamarind, what a great addition. One of the favorites, my barbecue sauce is balsamic, tamarind, and chipotle. And I do this for the kids because my wife is from Mexico. And tamarind is huge in Mexican mm-hmm. cuisine. So she has taught me so much. And that's a beautiful addition. What a beautiful addition. Tamarind and olives, I got to be honest with you. I believe I have never tried that, but that's going to be my special this weekend, my friend.
There you go.
And any percentage of sales got to come to you, Boris.
Okay.
But also about the lettuce that you mentioned. When I started culinary school and I was honored to work with one of the best French chefs in the United States before going there, basically apprenticing before my schooling, I worked with MASH. You got to remember, everything has to do with profit and shelf life. And MASH has a very low shelf life. And that's why we do not have it in many markets that are should be available to us. So the only way you can enjoy MASH in many ways is either growing it yourself or finding some specific markets that sell that kind of delicacy, in my opinion. Because like you said, MASH is probably one of the most magnificent greens out there. It's creamy, it's buttery, it's beautiful, and it takes watercress and minimize it and thicken up the leaf, basically, and take out the pepperiness. It's just magnificent. So that's what I feel the reason is. It is not a great, great product to keep on the shelf too long and keep spraying it and trying to sell it to you.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Boris. And it sounds like you've inspired a special at Il Mito this weekend. So maybe you need to make a trip over there.
I'm going to call it Boris Special.
There you go, Boris Special. Well, Karen posted on the Facebook page, we have tons of stinging nettles. And I figure the best revenge for stinging hands is eating the culprit for its health benefits. I wonder if the substances that make you sting, if taken by injection, are the same ones that are good for you if you just eat them. She would love tips on how to prepare stinging nettles and if you have any tips on harvesting them without getting stung. And I have been stung.
It's called a glove.
I have been stung with stinging nettles in France, and it has quite a kick.
Yeah, absolutely. I one of the things you got to remember, you got to blanch those. You have to take out a little bit of the bitterness out of them. At the same time, if you blend them, well, again, I am a big believer in using specific things in a specific way. Those would be great blended and great, again, created into a pesto. Why do I keep going back to a pesto? The reason is because a pesto means a paste. And just a pesto genoese that is only basil is not the only way a pesto should be manifested. I would love to hear your recipe as far as I wish I could ask you this right now on Facebook. What do you do with them? Because I would know what to do with it. I would love to know what you do with it.
I think, isn't nettle soup pretty common?
Yeah, it is. It is, because why, again, you do it, you boil it, right, and it boils out the bitterness to a certain extent. But I love them in that way. I love them in a soup. I love them in a soup. At the same time, I love them mixed with my spinach, sauteed with my spinach.
But you always, you need to.
You got to cook them.
Cook them.
You got to cook them, yeah.
Because you don't want that sting going out.
No, you're right.
Well, I think we probably have room for one more call, so let's go to Kathy in Verona next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Chef.
Hi, Kathy.
I am so glad to catch you on the air this morning.
I am all yours.
I have a very timely challenge. I'm right now driving to a farmer's market, and my son is in seventh grade, and his teacher has challenged them to bring something to school tomorrow from the farmer's market that's seasonal.
Okay.
Or has a lot of terroir, I guess is the word he used. It's his French teacher.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm thinking ramps, stinging nettles, not sure a bunch of seventh graders are going to go for that. Or do you know something that is appealing to kids that age that you can suggest?
So seventh grade, we're talking like 12, 13?
12, 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and Chef, you were just talking about having your daughter's class younger.
Yes. She's 6 and a half and I had all first graders, you know. But macaroni and cheese is not available in the farmer's market.
It doesn't have as much terroir as somebody else.
That's right, exactly. I think the best way to go about this, I wish I was present with you at farmer's market, but the fresh vegetables that are going to be available, probably you're going to have some carrots available in the market, and I think to create a nice dip for her, and getting some carrots, peeling them, getting some celery. You know, the kids got to know exactly where our food comes from. And if I were you, this is what I would do. I would take him through the farmer's market and ask, what is it that you want to take to your class? And let him decide. Yeah.
And I also find that sometimes the best person to ask about how to present or use something is the person that grew it. I mean, they have great ideas and they live with this produce. And so they also know that, for instance, because it's been cool and wet, that the radishes are super sweet and crunchy, and that, you know, a kid that might be turned off by a really strong radish might love that. And they know their vegetables.
They are. But at the same time, what Mom just said to us is, you know, I'm having a dilemma as far as what should I send with a seventh grader. Also, one more thing. I wish she had the chance to do this at school, but take tomatoes, which are in season right now, and dice them and create a salsa for them. Mm-hmm. Because they really need to know that salsa doesn't come from a jar. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge part of doing it. So that's what I would do. I would take something that is raw ingredient and show it to them in a finished product. That's what I would do as far as that's concerned.
Well, good luck with that, Kathy. And
you can see I haven't been that much help anyway.
And this is for French class.
It is.
That's great.
And, and it was hard to get to a farmer's market on the weekend. So,
Kathy, what do you have in mind? Are you driving with something in mind, or are you going to decide when you get there?
I'm going to decide when I get there because I've tried to think ahead, and then I heard you on the radio and thought, well, pull over to the side of the road and call him.
That's great. You know, also leeks are going to be out there. Again, what I would suggest is if you take a leek, which the French cuisine uses, especially from Lyon, they use it a lot. I would take the leek to the school and make sure I buy a few more and bring it home. And when he's not home, make sure that you make a leek potato soup for him and let him see what it goes. What is happening from plant to plate? That chain is missing in many of our communications and teaching our children about food. Once we figure out that chain and how to present it to them, they will eat pure anyway. Do you really think that they want these tons of sugar, tons of preservative in their body? Because it would catch up with them and they know about it. Give them the ownership of seeing how a leek is used in a culture that is interesting enough about food.
Well, I think that's great. And Kathy, good luck with that. We'd love to hear what you end up getting and what the response is in class. And Chef Fecker, we are out of time.
What do you mean?
I know.
Yeah, I love you, Judith. It was a pleasure.
The 45 minutes is up, but we will definitely have you back.
I would love to be back.
There is always something great to talk about with you. Chef Michael Fecker, why don't you give, there are a couple of websites where people can find information.
Yes, ilmito.com, ilmito.com. And my new restaurant is located at 1028 East Juno in the Knickerbocker. And the original Il Mito is in Wauwatosa at 6913 West North Avenue. And ChefMichaelFecker.com exists, IlMito.com exists, IlMito East exists. But IlMito will take you everywhere.
Right.
Most importantly, all of my recipes are available at IlMito.com. And again, my blog, everything is available. And I'm your chef anyway. So just communicate with me. I would love to cook for you anytime I get a chance. And scream at Judith to bring me back right away.
We will do that. Chef Michael Fecker, thank you so much.
Love you all.
And, well, if you're like me, Chef Fecker got your mouth watering with all those great ideas for early summer dishes. Coming up next, Jessica Bell of My Wine School shares her picks for refreshing summer wines. I bet some of her ideas would make a good complement to those meals that Chef Fecker discussed. We'll also talk about non-alcoholic options for wine lovers. That's next, right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.